On today's episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast, I sit down with my BFF, Teresa Swinton, on the couch in my living room with some handy-dandy headsets on, and we tried to have a conversation with some IVs in our arms, so we'll see how this one goes. Enjoy the show. To another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. I am your host, Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd LLC. Make sure you head over to the website, www.thehopnerd.com, for fundamentals, learning teams, support, and so much more. Send us an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com, and be sure to follow along with us on all things social media at The Hop Nerd or at Sam Goodman. Welcome to today's episode. Hello, howdy, hi, everybody. Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd LLC, the Hop Nerd Podcast. You know, the podcast where you find yourself at right now. We're pushing over 300 episodes now. We've had quite a few conversations together. That's pretty stinking awesome in my book, and I hope that you have enjoyed them, even if you just enjoyed them a tenth as much as I've enjoyed them. We're doing pretty stinking good. But I hear your feedback. I get your emails. I get your comments. I get your DMs. I know that you're here for the ride. I know that you're enjoying it, and we're going to keep having a blast and keep this thing trucking right along. But before we get into today's episode with the amazing, the great, my BFF, Teresa Swinton, do me a favor. Head over to the website, www.thehopnerd.com. You can check out all the services that we offer over there. You can check out the blog if you're into blogs and people who do a blogging and you're into reading blogs by people that are into blogging. I don't know. It sounded better in my head, but you can check out the blog. We've got a lot of great little articles over there. Some of them a little bit longer. Most of them pretty short little snippets that I hope are useful to you, from pre-event learning and pre-event learning teams to more longer format stuff about the hop journey. You can cruise over to the resources tab and watch some videos, download some videos, download some resources and guides and slides and kind of all that sort of stuff. And if you're looking for a way to support what we've got going on here at the show, if you're looking for a way to show us just a little bit of L-O-V-E love, just click on the merch store. We've got some cool new t-shirt designs. We've got some little sticker sheets. You can even get a beer glass. A beer glass. I like beer, and I like beer glasses. You can get one of those, too. I ordered a few of those beer glasses, too, because, I don't know, I think it's quite the gag, right, to pour someone a drink when they come visit my house, and I get to pour them a drink with my face on it. I just think that's hilarious. it is a gag, but they are cool. They are cool cups. So make sure you check that out. You can get some t-shirts, some stickers, some beer glasses. I was going to say beer glasses, beer goggles, beer barware. Does that sound barware? Does that make more sense? Hoodies and you name it. We've kind of got it over there. And if you're looking for a way to show us a little bit of love, show us a little support, in a way that costs you $0 and just a few seconds of your time, you can just tell people about the show. You can share the podcast with your friends when you see the new episodes pop up. Share those. You can like, follow, and subscribe to us on all social media platforms. That helps us a lot, way more than you could imagine. Because like algorithm stuff and other things, I just really don't understand. But people tell me that they're super important for some reason. So, and following and liking and sharing and all that stuff helps us a ton. And more importantly for me, I get to interact with you when you interact with stuff, when you leave comments, you like stuff, you share stuff. It just gives me the opportunity to have conversations with you, which is a super duper cool as well. This year, and already into 2025, believe that or not, we're getting stinking busy. Like, we are stinking busy, and I like being busy. Busy is good, and many of you have seen just how busy I've been so far this year, because many of you already follow along with all of our antics and adventures that we post on social media as we travel around the globe, all over the world, into all the nooks and crannies of the world, helping organizations operationalize human and organizational performance, like real deal in the trenches, helping companies operationalize human and organizational performance. You follow along with that adventure. You know how wild and wacky and crazy it's been, but all that is just to tell you that it's busy and it's getting busier. So if you need a hand, if your organization needs a little bit of help with human and organizational performance, we work with companies of all shapes and sizes, from small companies to the biggest of the big, from single day keynotes and this and that and the other, all the way to big, large scale whoppers of projects. We work with organizations around the globe on their HOP journey. And speaking of today's guest, Teresa Swinton, my BFF, who I'm going to pause here and swoon over just a bit. Teresa is amazing. If you're not following a Teresa, you should be following Teresa. If you're not familiar with Teresa and her work with Paradigm HP, you should be, and you need to go make yourself familiar. Familiar with Teresa's work and everything that she's got going on. I just have absolutely loved getting to spend this time with her and to continue to get to spend time with her over the course of this year and with this project and so many more. She's amazing. I've learned so much spending time with Teresa. She's just a great person, a great leader, and just strong and powerful and amazing. You should go follow along with Teresa and check out Paradigm HP. So unpause from me swooning over Teresa for just a second, swooning over my BFF just a little bit. Where I was going with that was that I partner with Teresa and her amazing, her team is amazing. Teresa's team out there, love you guys, mean it. You guys are freaking superheroes. I partner with Teresa and her team and several other independent HOP practitioners to do these large-scale projects for organizations, these large-scale, around-the-world type of global efforts. So even if that's what you're looking for, we can help you with that. Just send me an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com. So from everything from a keynote to as big as you want to go, and everything in between, no matter where you find yourself on your HOP journey, we would love to be a part of that, and we would love to be helpful to you. So send us an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com. Now, with all of that being said, I'm excited for today's episode. So I shared a picture a while back across social media platforms. I think that's how you're supposed to say it. Of me and Teresa sitting on a couch in our living room with IVs in our arms. And we were recording this podcast. So it was an interesting one. It was an experiment. Let me put it that way. This was an experiment because, you know, you've been following along. We've been sharing some of these in the field podcasts, and not in the field. I call them in the wild, right? In the real world, outside of Zoom, outside of, you know, the La La Land of the digital world, outside of me sitting here in front of this, like, big arm with my arm on and recording stuff. We've been doing these out in the real world. And I needed to upgrade my little rig there, my kit. And so I bought some of those like cool sports broadcaster headsets and we tried them out and it seems like they're working pretty good. We just plugged those into my little handy dandy recorder and we sit on the couch to podcast and try these things out. But I kind of just threw this on Teresa last minute. This was the day she was leaving. We'd spent about a month together and she was leaving this day to cruise back over to the UK to get back home. She was packed up. Her suitcase was sitting there. Like, we had a couple hours to kill before we had to take off to the airport. And this is what we did. So it was an experiment. We had nothing planned and we just kind of rambled and ranted and went in a bunch of different directions. So what I did with that, this thing was like more than a few hours long. I ended up just chunking it down into some key like pieces of that conversation that I think will be valuable to you, that I think are more interesting to you. And one thing that was really interesting about this is Teresa went in this with the idea that she wanted to interview me. So I do a whole bunch of talking. So when you listen to it, don't think, well, Sam's such an ass. He didn't let Teresa say a single thing. She had picked on me because she said that I have all these people on the podcast and I don't get to talk very much. And she wanted to interview me. So Teresa is the hot nerd in this episode. It is the Hob Nerd, and she proclaims it, and a couple points throughout you'll hear it, but she is the Hob Nerd, and she interviews me. So again, this is an experiment. Take it for what it is. It rambles and rants and goes in a few different directions. We're just having a conversation as a couple hot practitioners sitting on a couch, getting some IVs, hanging out. We had blankies too. Like, it was super nice. Avery's in and out of it, passing me notes. You'll hear stuff in the background from Jarrell working on stuff across the house. I mean, it was here and there and everywhere. We had dogs on our laps. Like, it was wild and crazy, and it was a ton of fun. So I can't not share it, but take it for what it is. I think that's what I'm really trying to say. Take it for what it is. And I think that you'll find it to be a really interesting conversation and really valuable. We'll cut back and forth between a couple different kind of segments, right? And I'm not coming back to this thing. I'm not talking in between. This is the last you're going to hear. Well, it's not the last. You're going to hear a lot more of my voice, I guess. But this is the last you're going to hear of me talking about this in the room editing it. How about that? So here we go. Hanging out with Teresa Swinton on my couch, IVs in her arms, under blankies, with dogs on our laps, and Avery passing us notes, and it was an absolute ton of fun. Enjoy the podcast. What do you think?
I think it's really good. It's a nice bit of kit, isn't it?
I think it'll work well for the in the wild.
Yes, definitely.
In the wild stuff. This is kind of in the wild.
Yeah, this is in the wild. Yeah, on the, definitely.
On the couch getting IVs.
This is the strangest podcast I've ever done. I know that.
With Jarrell and Avery making a video in the background.
Maybe we shouldn't hope this one goes viral then.
It probably will, for this exact reason. This is, you know, I tell people this all the time, but it's the, I think it's what the reason why most people enjoy my podcast is it's definitely not overly produced. No.
And there's always something new and exciting going on, clearly.
People always tend to describe it kind of like if you were hanging out in a bar with a bunch of people talking about the stuff that we talk about, this is the conversation that you would probably get.
Except minus the IVs, normally. Obviously.
Well, you can get these in a bar now, too.
Well, yeah, true. Yeah, true. I bet you do this with all your podcast guests.
Every now and again. No, this is actually a first, which is,
you know. I feel very honored.
I think the more and more that I think I just generally do anything, there's just more and more firsts, which is
that's good. Firsts are good.
Yeah, there's not much repetitive. That's for sure. It's always pretty much the first. What do you want to talk about?
So I was thinking that we could revisit that conversation we were having at Stupid O'Clock the other morning.
I don't know how much of it I can remember.
I can't remember much of it.
To be completely honest with you.
But what I do remember is I learned a lot just listening to you rabbit on the other morning in the car.
I was trying my best to stay awake.
Yeah, I know. You did a good job.
This was at like, what, 2:45 in the morning?
I know.
3 o'clock in the morning.
In the middle of a blizzard somewhere in deepest, darkest Nevada.
Yeah, it was a mountain somewhere. We were coming down a mountain somewhere is what was happening.
I can't believe you drove for 13 hours. Nah. That was just... And I can't believe I slept for 12 and a half of them. I'm a really rubbish passenger on the road trip.
It was good.
It was good. It was good. But the conversation was really about... What it boiled down to, I think, was the difference... If there is a difference between risk prevention and risk control.
Right.
And it was a really fascinating conversation for me because I think of them as one and the same thing.
Right.
But what I liked about the way that you described it was that, you know, if and when the prevention fails, the control is the life-saving piece, the life-saving control.
Right.
And so I just thought it was such a fascinating conversation. And I thought it was worth you talking more than your guest on this particular podcast because who knew that you're so clever?
I try my best to make people think that I'm not.
Well, you do a very good job of that.
Pro level, right?
Pro level, yeah.
Pro level.
But you know, we've been traveling around the world now for nearly 3 months, is it? 2 months, yeah. 3 months?
Yeah.
Feels like forever.
Well, we've been together for a solid month right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, I know.
Just yeah. one trip, basically. Yeah. It's a solid month.
You must be sick of me.
No, I love it. It's amazing.
And so, yeah, I just thought it was really fascinating, and I thought it would be just great to kind of get your perspective on this on a recording.
Yeah. Well, I think the place where I'd start with that is I come back to that that shift in assumptions that we spend so much time talking about, that change in assumptions, that change that we hear in language within our organizations. You know, we had mentioned this during our 2:30, 3 o'clock a.m. conversation driving the other day that, you know, many organizations can't even have that conversation yet.
No.
We're not at a level of maturity within our organizations where we can openly admit that failure can occur, and not only that it can, but it will, that it does, whether yeah. we hear about it or not, that it does occur within our organizations.
Yeah.
And there's a certain level of maturity that I think we have to grow to before we can really admit that, right? It's tough, especially when we're talking about the potential for catastrophic occurrences
yeah.
within our work worlds. In particular, I shared with you that an organization that I'd worked in, you know, it was like you couldn't say that shit that kills you, because nothing here can kill people. We don't, not here.
Yeah, we, yeah.
The Grim Reaper lives there too.
Leaves a bad taste in your mouth, doesn't it, talking
well,
about
it's an uncomfortable
things.
Conversation, right?
Yeah, it is.
But it's
yeah.
kind of like when you have any kind of problem, right? The first step in working on a problem is admitting that you
admitting
have
you've
the,
got a first,
the problem.
Yeah, in the first place, yeah.
And so pretending that our organizations don't have the ability to kill people, I think just kills more people.
Yeah.
Right? It's probably, and then yeah. we go, how could we have ever seen that coming? How could we have ever imagined that? But it hinges on that shift in assumptions that we spend so much time talking about in our world, of that shift from failure is never an if,
mm-hmm.
failure is always a win, right? And if we genuinely believe that, saying that when failure occurs, admits that our preventative strategies will break down and fail at some point.
Yes.
Right? Because I think we go farther with that. And we understand that our organizations are extremely good at prevention.
Yeah.
Any high-performing organization, and you can loosely describe high-performing organizations, I would even venture a guess that any, air quotes here, safety-focused organizations,
yeah, I agree. Right,
we're genuinely really good at prevention. As industries, we're overall really pretty stinking great at prevention. And we know this because, at least within our organizations, that catastrophic event, that fatality, probably for the purposes of our conversation, it's the anomaly. It's about as anomalous as it gets. That tells us, right, over time that our preventative strategies do work.
Yes.
That they work pretty stinking great, that we're pretty good at it. It's not a normal day for us to have an occupational fatality. It's not a normal day for us to blow something up. It's not a normal day for us to burn something down. And you can carry that into production quality, efficiency, any of those kind of subcategories that we want to talk about. It's not normal for us to produce massive amount of manufacturing defects that make it to our customers and cause us really, really bad days. So those things just don't happen.
No.
And when they do, again, it's the anomaly. So that long, rambly rant is to say that we're pretty good at prevention. So everything that I'm getting ready to say, it's not to undo or reverse or remove our focus on prevention, because prevention is good.
Yeah.
The problem is that we become so biased towards prevention that when something goes wrong, because it's gonna, about the only line of questioning that we ask after the fact is, how did we fail to prevent?
Yeah.
Right? When I think that there's more questions there, right?
Yeah.
But there's way too many pathways to failure for us to ever map all of those out. I mean, just from that standpoint alone, we know there are way too many paths to failure. We have to genuinely kind of think beyond that a bit,
mm-hmm.
especially around our areas of critical risk and that if to when. So when something fails, when the stars align, when our preventative strategies degrade, break down, go wrong, all that stuff when somebody makes that error, because they're gonna, and they're gonna make that error because they're gonna, when all of our preventative strategies are degraded and all of our softer controls are kind of have kind of fallen by the wayside around those areas of critical risk, what's beyond that? And to me, that's where we really get into the capacity and the margin conversation, right? It's that next piece. It's that injury reducing, outcome reducing control question, right? For that specific thing, and how do we reduce the outcome of that event to at least something that's recoverable, right? To something that's a, that's at least acceptable by the standards of our organization, to where people have that ability to kind of have that thing happen, you know, go from, as the famous Todd Conklin says, right, the broke arm versus dead example, right, from dead to broke arm. That's a pretty good trade-off around an area of critical risk. But I don't think we ever get to that point if we stay completely tied up on prevention. As we are, we're extremely biased towards prevention. Right. So we've asked that prevention question so much, and we've spent so much time focused on prevention, again, that we've gotten really good at it. But our returns on our preventative efforts are diminishing.
Do you think we've gone a little bit from, you know, years ago when we wanted people to report many, many, many near hits, unsafe conditions and all of those kind of things? Everything was a fatality. You could die, you know, every, you know, paper cut could kill you. I remember I remember being in sort of conversations where, especially where the workforce, you know, the staff were almost like rating the risk of the near hit that they were reporting. And it was like, well, everything, you know, everything, literally everything could kill you. So everything went in it with a fairly high score. And do you think we're at the other end of the spectrum a little bit, where now we're saying, well, in our estimate now, because we're so good at prevention, nothing could kill us, so we don't have to have that conversation. We don't have to go there.
Yeah, probably, right? But I mean, I see that quite a bit still, even in pretty mature organizations. Right? I think you still see quite a bit of that, where you'll have that slip or trip or fall or something in the parking lot, right? You know, the example I give is I'm really good at tripping over thin air and, and like pro level at it, right? I'm great at it. And, you know, if I trip over my own feet, trip over thin air, trip over that ghost or whatever it is that's walking around me. And I fall down and I break my leg into three pieces. I mean, you could argue pretty easily, right, that, but this could have been far, far, far worse. You could have tripped and you could have did one of those like cartoon-like things where you stumbled out into traffic and then you were hit by a bus and struck by lightning and everybody died.
And like then a lorry went over the top of you.
Like a cartoon movie scene, right? You know, of course we can do that. But I mean, if realistically speaking, if I fall down in the parking lot tripping over thin air and I break my leg into three pieces, I shatter my leg, you know, I would argue that that's, on average, probably the most extreme outcome of that event. That's typically would be the most extreme outcome, and not even the typical outcome of that event.
And you're going to get better.
Falling just right, shattering the leg. I would, that for that particular event, tripping over thin air would probably be the anomalous outcome. Right. Almost always I'm going to fall down and be like, well, shit, that sucked. I'm going to get back up and go to work. kind of move on with life.
Hope nobody saw me.
That's exactly. What do we say? The first thing you do when you fall down is what? Look around to see if anybody saw you.
Yeah, definitely.
Turn beet red and go, I'm glad nobody was here to see that.
Won't be putting that one in the accident.
So I guess where I'm going with that is within reason. Within reason, I think you have to, we go to extremes and everything in our organizations, and we overcomplicate things, I think, well beyond what they're due, right? We take complex systems, and then on top of that, we overcomplicate it. It just seems to be our MO, kind of, in our work worlds. And so we'll take that event, and we'll go, well, they should have, could have died, and then we're left scratching our head because we go, well, how do we stop this? How do we put in a life-saving control in the parking lot? How do we stop Sam from tripping over thin air? My God, you know, the only thing that we end up is the only place that we end up at with that, because it's completely illogical to begin with, is we end up in the preventative space, and usually in the preventative space on end user stuff, where we go, well, Sam needs to pay more attention. So since we're stuck in prevention and we don't know what else to do with this, I think we need to give Sam, oh, and anybody else that walks in the parking lot, walking training, and tell them, and teach them how to be more situationally aware in the parking lot.
Pay more attention.
Right. So back to the loop of safety and sanity, I think, that we find ourselves in sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think that you kind of start with, that's where I love sticky so much. I talk about sticky a lot, right? Mm. We all talk about sticky. It's kind of become a buzzword throughout the industry now, because it's got that little bit of a, it works. That's probably the right way to put it, is it works.
Yeah.
Shit that kills you, right? Yeah. If we really think about shit that actually kills our employees, right? When we're looking at those things, if I'm looking at, we'd mentioned fall protection, but you can think of any, probably hundreds of examples throughout industries,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Where if it's something that I know kills and maims people, why in the hell would I want to stop with prevention?
Yeah.
Why in the hell would I stop with prevention? When I know that preventative strategies will degrade, break down, and fail over time, when I know that people are going to make an error, when I know that they're going to get it wrong, why in the hell? That's just too brittle. It's too brittle for something that results in irrecoverable outcomes. It's far too brittle, right? Because prevention is great. And if we can prevent it, awesome. And we're going to prevent it almost always on top of that. But when it goes wrong around that piece of critical risk within our organization, I don't want to just be relying on prevention. I want to make sure that there's something else there, whatever that thing may be. And I know I'm speaking kind of broadly here, because I mean, we could go down the rabbit hole of a bazillion different examples, which would just send people into a mind-numbing coma.
Well, and this but is part of the problem, isn't it?
There's got to be something beyond that, right?
Yeah, and I think that's part of the challenge. You know, obviously, a lot of the work we've been doing together recently is around learning team facilitation, mm-hmm. and this was the other piece to our conversation. It is once your prevention measures do fail, the only people then who can perceive or conceive of the possible are the workers.
Yeah, they're going to teach you.
They're going to show you how they get around your prevention strategies.
Well, and it's not just that. You know, who has the most invested in not dying at work?
The workers.
The people that die at work, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And not to, you know, we both have a lot of really great COO and CEO friends and VP friends out there, but they're not the ones that are usually getting, electrocuted and dying. They're not the ones that are getting cut in half with equipment. They're not the ones that, because they don't work in that, right?
Yeah.
You know, so where I'm going with this is the people that live with critical risk, that work with critical risk each and every day on the sharp end, they have the most intimate understanding of critical risk.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to teach you how they can die at work. And they're usually going to teach you some really great ideas on prevention, but they're also going to teach you some really great ideas on how to build some of that capacity after things break down.
Yeah.
Right. To allow that error, that failure that occurs with a preventative strategy.
Yeah.
On the other side of that, on how to create systems that will better absorb those failures,
mm-hmm.
and really end up in less outcome. That's really where we're going.
Yeah. Reducing the consequences.
Reducing outcome, again, from maybe what would have been fatality or multiple fatality,
yes,
into scrapes, bumps, bruises, broke arms,
yes,
right. Again, I think that's it. So to your point, yeah, I think that's how you get there, because we're going to guess, and we've got some pretty good ideas. I mean, you and I, as we said, we could sit here on the couch with our IVs in our arm, and we could explore all these different paths, and we could come up with really great ideas on how we think those things would work, you know, and where those fatality generators might be. And again, with the assumption that there are fatality generators out there that we don't know, and that we don't know that we need to know, and kind of all those basic things that come along with all of this stuff, right? Because
yes,
that's a piece of it as well, right? The unknown that we can't know, right? That comes along with some of this. But the people that are going to teach us the reality are the people that live that operational reality. That's a key piece to this entire conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
I think that's a key piece to that. So and I just heard this last week while we were having some of our conversations in Nevada. And I always get in trouble because my brain switches back and forth between Nevada and Nevada. And I know they laugh at you when you say Nevada, right? So I'm very deliberate in saying Nevada. But still, my brain being from Arizona.
Sorry, you sound better at saying that than me because I'm from England. So it just sounds completely wrong when
but
I
you,
say it.
But you get a pass.
Oh, okay. Right? That's
so
fair
when
enough.
You say it, when you say it, they chalk it up to
Nevada.
Yeah. So Nevada. I want to say, I think Nevada. It's in Nevada. We were in Nevada having some of these conversations, and I was talking a bit about how we redefine safety within our work worlds, right? Mm. And we kick that around a lot, you know, not the absence of negatives, the presence of capacity. And I tend to take that conversation more towards it's not the absence of negatives, it's the presence of positives,
yes,
right? Which tends to start to me, make that conversation make a bit more sense. Right, when we're having those kind of introductory hot fundamentals kind of conversations. Now, I'll usually go down this path of it's not the absence of accidents, it's the presence of margin. Right, and margin. When I throw this term margin out there, especially within our organizations, I tend to get light bulbs going off. And where I'm going with this is we understand margin.
Yeah.
As people.
Yes.
Margin makes sense to us in our business, it makes sense to us. Because think about that. Where else in our business do we lack margin? And the answer is usually almost nowhere, right? We add margin into our budgets. We add margin into our schedules. We add margin into our supply chain timelines. We add margin through the safety stocks and critical spares that we put around critical equipment, yeah. Right? We build in margin with the assumption that things can't. That things will go wrong.
Yeah.
Safety is one of those few areas that a lot of times we lack the margin, right? We just lack it.
It's absolute.
Because we assume that our job is to make sure things can't go wrong.
Yeah.
And if we're doing our job correctly, or if the stinking safety people are doing their jobs correctly, mm-hmm. then things shouldn't go wrong, right? Because that's the entire job, right? I mean, that's the entire job. We just make sure things can never go wrong, and then things can never go wrong.
Yeah.
When we start having that conversation around margin, it seems to be a bit more palatable. It seems to be a bit more understandable from a business perspective. Right. So, not to completely derail that really interesting conversation, I think, with some really interesting work that you guys have going on there. But there's something there around this idea of margin, that bit of room, as you kind of mentioned, right? Because I don't know that as an organization, can we ever truly measure and say we're at 100% capacity? I don't know that we can know. Really, I don't know that we can know. But we can know that we have a bit of extra space to fall on our face a little bit.
Well, that's what,
and still be able to stand up and recover, right?
Well, we must do, because that's what drift is, isn't it?
Right, exactly.
You know, drift is when we have got drift, that helps us get work done. When we, you know, achieve successful outcomes, mm-hmm. regardless of the methodology, where our workers are staying within a margin, aren't they?
Right. Well, they're usually creating a bit of margin.
Absolutely.
I would venture a guess, yeah. Right? I think yeah. that, and where I'm going with this is around their systems, right? Especially around their systems that involve critical risk. Yeah. Why would we cut it so razor thin? Those are the places where, and you would think especially, I know people are going to get mad when I bring up the pandemic, because we're not supposed to, the thing that we should not talk about.
No.
Right. And I get it. I don't like talking about it either. But
it's okay. You can talk about it in England.
You guys are still talking about it a lot?
Yeah. We still got it, right?
We're pretending that it never happened at this point.
Americans cured it. England still got it.
Well, I was telling you, you know, like the Floridians, they opened up 2 weeks after it happened, right?
I know. We're still locked down. It's only 2024, so.
You sure you're not in California? California friends, I was just joking. but where I was going at this is that...
That was the other part of that conversation the other day.
Right, yeah. But I mean, you think about it, you know, you think about pre-COVID stuff, right? And we cut. What was the big word? Lean.
Yeah.
Lean. And I'm not opposed to lean, don't get me wrong. But I think we don't do ourselves any favors when we cut to the bone around critical things, mm-hmm. because especially around areas of critical risks, and I'm not just talking about the shit that kills people.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the stuff that bankrupts us, right? I'm talking about the stuff that is really important to our businesses. When we trim all of that fat, sometimes we forget that fat's doing something. Having that bit of fat to gnaw on when everything else goes a bit wrong is kind of handy sometimes. Right. So to me, that's that bit of margin. And where I was going with this around the pandemic is, especially coming out of the pandemic, many organizations just prior to that, many, many folks that I've spent time talking to, they mentioned, you know, that, yeah, we've been going through all these lean efforts. We're getting rid of all the extra crap on our shelves, getting rid of all the little extra stuff that we have. You know, why the hell would we need 50 cases of Lysol? Just get me 3 bottles.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll just order 3 more when those are out. And then all of a sudden, the pandemic happens.
Yes, and we can't get anything.
And I'm not saying 50 cases of Lysol is the answer.
No.
But maybe 1 or 2 is better than 3 bottles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe some of those masks, they could be paper towels.
Toilet room.
toilet paper. Again, not that you should be the person that has your garage full and then, you know, being a total dickhead and then selling them on Amazon for $400 a roll of toilet paper. I don't think you should be that person.
I didn't realize you'd realized I was doing that.
So. Well, I was just bummed that I didn't think of that first.
I thought I'd kept that a really good secret. Anybody want to buy a toilet roll?
Half off now. They're only $200.
They'll come in handy. Believe you me.
But I don't know. And again, this is a bit rambly and I apologize, but you know, we can't really afford to not have that margin around our areas of critical risk. It's a bit of insurance.
Yeah.
It costs something for sure. Absolutely. Just like keeping those few extra cases of Lysol on our shelves, it costs something.
Mm.
But it's just a really good example of that, it's a bit of an investment into some insurance because you're assuming that things are going to go wrong. Again, I'm not saying that you have to become a next level prepper or anything.
No.
But again, this conversation around margin, I think, is a really easy way to kind of begin to have some of that. Really, what we're having is a bit of a capacity conversation, right? It's a really easy way to begin to start having some of that when things fail kind of conversation. Again, that needs to be realistic. And it needs to be around those areas of critical risk within your organization. But, again, if it's critical, if it kills and maims people, if it bankrupts your business, if it sends out thousands of quality defects to your customers, those are pretty critical things. It seems like we would want to have some margin for things to go wrong, some margin for our preventative strategies, our systems to let our people down. We would want to have something a bit beyond just things can't go wrong or things shouldn't go wrong. Most organizations are at with their safety professionals, right? Is that they say, I hire somebody to do safety, and damn it, they better do safety for me.
Yeah.
And the way that they do safety is by making sure bad things don't happen. And if bad things happen, then it's that stupid safety professional's fault.
Yeah.
Because they should have predicted and they should have prevented.
Yeah.
Right. Talk about a single point of failure. Jesus. Right. Yeah. You're usually going to take one person or maybe two or a small group of people and say, you're now responsible for everybody's safety. Right. That's the exact opposite of putting safety as a line function.
Yeah.
Right. That's exactly the opposite of what, I mean, even in more traditional safety approaches, you know, where we say, you know, op should own safety. It's pulling all that bit right out of them and putting it right into a group of folks and say, you guys figure it out. We don't have time for this safety mess. You know, so where I'm going with this, though, is that I think a lot of times with that conversation, I've written a bunch about this, right? That was kind of the first Safety Sucks book.
Yeah.
And that was the manifesto book. It was kind of all around this general topic. I think safety becomes the easy button.
Yes.
It becomes the easy button. And I mean, safety as a function within our organizations. I think that we've struggled to define a meaningful role for the practitioner. And a part of that is that we viewed them as an easy button.
Mm-hmm.
And when that easy button lets us down, because it's going to, because they're just a person, they don't have any magical powers. They don't have any more magical powers to, what's that say, Avery? Sorry. Avery's bringing me notes and I'm getting an IV yanked out of me at the same time. So if I sound entirely incoherent, there's a reason.
And you're a bloke and you're multitasking. And, so this is a really tough day for you. Yeah. Seriously.
But where I'm going with that, I think, is that when that easy button lets us down, because it's gonna, because again, just because you put safety in front of the word professional doesn't make them any more magical than anybody else that works for our organizations. You know, they can't predict and prevent any better than anyone else in our organizations. When that easy button fails, then the easy button becomes the easy punching bag for us. And we like to smack them around and say, well, you should have noticed. I paid you to notice. And you, how could you not have noticed? Yeah. Right. Sorry. I'm just kind of hurts a little bit. Getting the fun sticker yanked off my eye.
Oh, that doesn't hurt. You just.
This is the worst part for
you're
me.
You're such a wuss, honest to God. Honestly, I just can't believe it. You're crying because the plaster is pulling your hairs off your arm. You big baby.
But no, so I don't know. I didn't mean to. Where I was going with that was that I think that's a very common definition that we use around safety professionals, but I don't think it's the most meaningful use of the role, right? So back to a point that you were making earlier, is that the conversations, the best, most real and realistic conversations around our critical risks, at least the things that we tend to know maim and kill people within our work worlds, you know, the best conversations around preventative strategies for those things.
Yeah.
The best conversations around life-saving controls and safeguards relating to those things, those conversations, that information,
yeah,
it exists nearest to the work. Right? So if we really want to think about a role for a practitioner, a safety practitioner, of course, yeah, yada, 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 safety compliance, this, rules and regs, that, and blah, blah, of course, yeah, of course, there's a base level of those things.
Yeah.
But beyond those things, the role of the safety professional as a facilitator, these more curiosity-driven conversations with those nearest to the work. I think that's where you're going to find the most bang for your buck. It's not going to be the easy button to say, hey, I want you to go lock yourself in the office and compile all of this meaningless data that we collect and try to eventually turn it into a crystal ball of prediction. I don't think that's it.
No.
I genuinely think it's being that curious learner, that curious facilitator, that person that explores with those nearest to the work the things that can and do go wrong within our work worlds. And again, I just think that there's something much more there, right? I'm not going to take a stab at redefining the role as we sit on the couch and I'm holding my holding my little piece of gauze on my on my arm to keep from bleeding out. But
no,
I think that's a bit of where we need to go, right? So I think to your question a bit around, you know, I think starting some of those conversations, I think it's a bit of honesty. Now, I'm not saying so much on the practitioner's part as much as I'm saying maybe on the organization overall.
Yes.
I think, as we said, you know, failure's not an if, it's a when. That's a big chunk of honesty for many organizations we have to accept. Right, the fact that the Grim Reaper is just as applicable in our work worlds as it is in any other work world or throughout our lives, I think that's a piece of honesty we have to be willing to admit as organizations.
Yeah.
I think another chunk of that is admitting that there are things that exist out there that can maim and kill our employees or result in catastrophic events that we don't know and that we'll never necessarily know that we need to know, right, until we need to know them. I think there's some of those things as well that we can't know everything. I think that's some of probably the, not to go too philosophical here,
woo-woo.
I guess, and it is a bit woo-woo, but we tend to approach our organizations with this mindset that we can know all, that we should know all, and that we can control all, which is just fallacy. That's
yeah.
impossible. And we can't. We can't control everything. We pretend that we can. Right, we pretend that we can control what our employees eat for breakfast.
Yeah.
You know, we pretend that we can control the weather. Right? We pretend, right? And I don't think it does us any justice to be kind of dishonest with ourselves around those things. I know we've had a bit of a rambly rant mess, which is, I think, always good because these are chaotic and messy things, and I think messy conversations lead us into a bit of a better direction.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, we have to start with this idea of, and it genuinely is a question, it's not to sound pointed, but do we want to kill more or less people? And I think that's really where we have to start the conversation.
Yeah.
Right. And I think any of us, if let's put aside those kind of financial incentives that come along with killing or hurting less people, let's put those things aside and let's get to the kind of the real core of what we're talking about here from a real, a truly humanistic perspective. Yeah. Is I don't, you know,
our
I'm with you.
Moral obligation.
You know, that's what I mean, right? Yeah. Doing the right things because of the right things.
Yes.
And I think, you know, to kind of your mission that you talk about quite a bit is that no one should die at work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I think is a really good, like, period.
Yeah.
Like a big, heavy period right on the end of that. Yeah. No one should die just going to work and trying to earn a living.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be that way. I think any of us can agree that it shouldn't be that way.
Yeah.
I think from there, starting with that kind of goal, I think we have to have realistic conversations.
Honest
yeah. conversations.
Honest to God conversations.
Not those conversations about how we wish the world were.
Yeah.
Which I think is how we tee up most of those conversations.
Yeah.
Right. I also wish I could live forever, but that's not going to happen, at least not anytime soon.
Well, I don't know. If Juro has anything to do with it, he keeps pumping you full of good vitamins and minerals.
We did just have an amazing IV there, you know, which is true. But, I think that's just to keep me going. I undo all of that with our 2 and 3 hour nights of sleep. And,
yeah, I know.
You know,
it's been
our kind of... our month we've had. I think this month, Teresa, I've slept maybe 14 hours out of the entire month.
Yeah, I think you're right. I know. That's because you've been driving me around for most of it and with me snoring my head off catching
flies. I had to
flies.
Give you the grand tour.
Oh,
you
it's
had
been
to get
amazing.
The Southwest. We've got to come back to that. And then I'll stop because I know we've been gone for a second. And how much of this is usable, God knows.
I know.
And
I didn't even get a word in edgeways, which makes a change for me, doesn't it, really?
Well, so I'd usually do the opposite here, right?
It's been lovely interviewing you for your podcast.
My whole end goal here is to, I always write STFU on the top of things, right?
STFU?
Yeah, shut the fuck up.
Oh, right, okay.
So I write that on the top of my little notepad.
But we did agree that you would talk and I would shut the fuck up this time.
Right.
Because, you know, we all think you're a bit dopey, really, you know, because you just like shout at people all the time. So it was an opportunity for you to talk.
Yeah.
So I'm the hawk nerd today. Yeah. And you're somebody else. You're Sam Goodman.
There you go.
And it's really impressive. So and it also, when you start talking in your car, it's so much better than listening to those shit podcasts that you actually listen to.
I listen to a lot of crappy
and that's
podcasts.
Why we drink. And
yeah, I listen to, and that's why we drink.
Joe Rogan.
I listen to Joe Rogan a little bit. I listen to all of them a little bit. Yeah. You know, the one thing I don't listen to.
No.
Safety podcast.
You don't listen to your own podcast.
I don't listen to any safety podcast. I definitely don't listen to mine. I definitely do not listen to mine.
They're interesting and you have amazing people on your podcast, obviously. You're very fortunate to get those amazing people to come and talk to you. But you do definitely need to talk more yourself on them.
Well, I did a bunch. Forget what year it was. So over the past couple years prior to this year, I did podcasts where just me talking about stuff, but more in kind of like rant style, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. I've had probably at least I'd say I probably had about 100 or so episodes of just talking now.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but they are good. But yeah. It's just that, you know, like I said, you know, I've learned so much from spending this time with you. It has been a privilege. I'm not just blowing smoke up your ass, but it has been an absolute privilege to spend this time with you. I've been raving to the team back home about, you know, God, I've learned so much, and you know, he's such a clever guy, and I suppose that's really, I know we are still waffling, but I just really wanted to kind of finish up with that conversation about, and we've touched on it a few times in the car, where is hop going? What's the next generation? It's probably not even going to be hop, but where is it going? What are we going to be, what is our, you know, the people who come behind us going to be doing when we're too old and decrepit to be doing this? Well, next
and
year.
I'm with you. My knees hurt. Yeah. My head hurts.
And my hips hurt. I can't.
The more and more that I do, you know how this goes. You live in airports. The only thing I found that happens to me in airports is I get fatter and fatter. Like, I can't. Like, because you just can't, you know? It just, you're living in hotel rooms. You're living.
We've had a couple of nice airport meals. I'll give you that. Yeah.
That stupid place in where were we at? Atlanta, in the international terminal. I think we're on the way to Brazil.
We had a nice meal there.
That little sushi place.
Oh,
so anybody out there? There's a nice little sushi restaurant. They had.
We were on the F concourse, weren't we?
Yeah, I think so. Whatever the international terminal is there. Yeah. It's right behind where the guy plays the piano. So for all my road warriors out there, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There's like a little central food court area in their international terminal. There's like a little round bar, a guy playing a piano, and right behind it, there's a little sushi place, and they had collard green ramen.
Oh, it was lovely. I've never tried that before.
That was so good. The sushi was okay.
You talk a lot about food.
Yeah, how can you not?
Yeah.
Jesus.
But that was a lovely meal, and it was nice and chilled. We ended up sitting there for far too long.
Well, we had like 4 or 5 hours to kill.
We did. Yeah.
So we did that, and then we went down, and so here's a bit of what I found it interesting after the fact, and I haven't shared this with you yet. But we went far to the other end of that terminal, right? And we sat down, we were hanging out, and we were sitting in front of this big kind of abstract art piece of Dale Earnhardt.
Yeah.
OG Dale Earnhardt, not junior, the man, right?
Yeah.
In front of Dale Earnhardt. And I didn't realize it. And I hope I'm not wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm right because I saw it in the news. That same day, we're having this long conversation. Dale Earnhardt sitting right in front of us. And we're having these amazing conversations. And that was the day that he had died.
No way.
So he's gone. Yeah. Yeah. It hit me after the fact.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
It was pretty interesting, yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And we could even tie that a bit back into our conversation that Le Mans device that wasn't around in that time, right, that similar to our harness conversation.
Yeah.
It's not assuming that you're not going to wreck the car.
No.
Right? It's actually planning for you to wreck the car. When you do, it's not going to break your neck.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
My very little understanding of Le Mans devices
in
racing.
Yeah.
Your question is a really good one. I know we kind of go all over the place, and this will probably help to maybe sum up some of our rambly conversation that, you know, again, I think if we would have recorded in the car, it would have probably been way better because we were half asleep and it was a really good, lots of truth bombs in that conversation. But I think to me, we're personally, and this is just me, right? Because I think there's a lot of kind of outputs that come out of what we call human and organizational performance. And I have a much looser definition than maybe what some do around human and organizational performance. Where I really tend to sum that up as the kind of this collection of better beliefs, better assumptions, better ideas from varying and diverse sources that we usually tend to apply through a set of better principles, core principles, right? Where, you know, some use more towards Todd's Five, or, you know, popularized by Todd. Some go more towards a more traditional, you know, but they all have the same underlying meaning. It's
Absolutely.
Just a set of principles. The underlying beliefs and assumptions are pretty much the same, right? Yeah. For me, where my line of work, my focus on those things, as I think with many in this space, is that we're trying to grow towards not killing people at work.
Yeah.
Now, again, I'm summing up a bit of our conversation here, too, before I get to what I think is the future. To me, the way that we do that, it's not through giving up prevention, of course.
No.
But it is growing beyond prevention, right? There's better assumptions that tell us that failure is going to occur even when we have the most world-class, that's the word we use a lot, world-class preventative strategies in place. Even when we have like best-in-class safety management systems and kind of all those things, all of which I think are good. I think those things are great, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's what's beyond that around our areas of critical risk. So the way that I think that we get there is through life-saving controls.
Yeah.
Right? The presence and functionality of robust and error-tolerant.
Yeah, just to be clear, you're not talking like, you know, golden rules, life-saving, you know, like posters on the wall type.
I get in trouble when I say this, but rules have never saved anybody's life.
No, exactly. No.
Because rules is just rules.
Yeah.
Right? That's all they are. They're just words, right?
Yeah.
I think the life-saving control piece, if we want to talk about words versus actions even, right, the life-saving control piece is the actual thing yeah. right? Typically, and even back to the things that we actually can put our hands on and manage within our work worlds. The life-saving control, we can actually build that thing. We can actually make sure that it's air tolerant, that it's actually effective, that people can use it, right? We can actually put it there, and then we can go look and see that it's there, and that we could actually test it. Right? We could actually do those things. It's that thing that, as leaders in organizations, we can actually put our hands on it, right? You can't put your hands on a rule, really.
No.
You can demand and scream and yell.
Yeah.
But guess what? I can choose to not do.
You can choose not to apply it.
Right. And kind of on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
Right? So to me, kind of, again, summing up some of our conversation a little bit and getting to answering your question along the lines in the same way. For me, that's where we end up at. Through deep operational, through a better set of beliefs and assumptions, we create an environment in which learning is possible. Deep and meaningful operational learning is possible. Through that deep and meaningful operational learning, we create improvement. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
We uncover areas of critical risk that sometimes we didn't even know that we had. We uncover areas where we thought that we had things controlled, but our controls actually make it really hard for work to happen. So they're bypassed, they're degraded, they're on and on and on and on, right?
Yeah.
Where I'm moving with this is we're moving towards this idea of examining for, finding, learning more about areas where we lack control around things that actually kill and maim people, or areas where we had controls, but they've degraded or they just don't work, right? And we better design and control those areas of critical risk,
yeah,
right, within our work world.
So are we going to all become masters of complexity?
Yeah, right.
Well, we kind of are, though, aren't we, really? Because isn't that what you're explaining?
Well, I think where I'm going with this, and to put this into my hillbilly ease, which, you know, a lot of people tend to relate to, because the complexity conversation is complex. Boom, right? You got to have the little joke in there.
Yeah.
I think where it goes is there's a few things there. It's understanding the things that we can actually control and manage in our work worlds.
Mm-hmm.
That's an important conversation. Back to the fact that we can, at least the things that we know kill and maim people, we can actually design and control apply life-saving controls to those things. We know that. That's that piece beyond prevention.
Yeah.
Right. We also see those things where prevention is fine. We don't really need to think beyond that because the outcome's not so extreme that why the hell would we need to think beyond that?
Yes.
Right. So back to me tripping over my feet in the parking lot.
Yeah.
You could put me in that suit that auto inflates. Have you seen those? Those are cool.
Oh, yeah.
Where you can, like, they use it with patient safety a lot. High fall risk people where you have the airbags.
I kind of wear one of those when I'm riding my horse.
I could use one of those, actually.
When I fall off.
I fall down a lot.
It fills with air and it's supposed to give me a soft landing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but falling off a horse can and will kill you.
Oh, yeah. Touch wood, it hasn't done it yet. Just only the brain's been affected so far.
Well, hopefully you're wearing a riding helmet.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah. 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 Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You got to you got to protect the critical bits.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But no, so I'll try my best to stay on track here, but my IV vitamins, I think, are kicking in.
Me too.
Yeah, I think that's where we get that. That's where I see HOP, and really, again, my loose definition of what HOP is.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not this like school of thought person where there are these hard lines drawn between traditional safety, safety two, because then God knows when safety three going to happen, right? Or HOP, yeah. Or safety differently,
yeah.
Or this or that. I could give a shit less what we call it.
Yeah.
Right. That's where I stick with that definition. I'm going to stick with that definition of better beliefs and assumptions.
Yeah,
from
I like
diverse
that.
And varying sources. Right?
Yeah, as you know, I've stolen that line.
Yeah. But with the same end result that we're seeking. Right? And it's right back to your mission. People shouldn't die at work.
Yeah.
And I think on that mission, we can create a lot of improvement around a lot of other things along the way.
Yeah.
Right. So that's kind of my North Star in this entire thing. Is, of course, I spend a lot of work in the quality world. Of course, I spend a lot of work in the efficiency world. Of course, I spend a lot of time in the, air quotes, safety world.
Yeah.
And the more and more I do those things, I start to realize that we're all saying exactly the same thing, whether we call it quality, safety, efficiency, or something else. But with the primary North Star being the exact same thing that you say around your mission, which is people shouldn't die at work.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And again, I think we learn our way towards there. We learn our way towards there and what we oftentimes learn almost always is that it, back to Todd's kind of famous quote, is that it was never a question of prevention, it was a question of control.
Control, yeah.
And when we find those areas of critical risk, we shouldn't stop at prevention.
No.
We should work with those nearest to the work to design life-saving controls and safeguards that are assuming that they're going to get it wrong because they're going to. And when we figure those things out with those folks, we still have to come back and look, because controls degrade and break down over time, just as our preventative strategies degrade and break down over time. That's a very traditional safety concept. Layering of safeguarding and controls. Layering of prevention, safeguards, controls, critical steps, right? Kind of all these different pieces. If it's that critical, and it should be that critical to us, if it's one of those areas within our work that results in horrific maimings and death, why would we not go beyond prevention? Why would we not go beyond the reduction of error? Why would we not go beyond those things? Why would we not try to make sure we have all the ingredients for that bit of recipe that we know that when we have all these ingredients, even if the milk's a little bit sour, even if we lose an egg, right, we still have the cake's still going to come out. It might be a little flat, but it's still going to come out the way that we hoped that it would come out, right? It's still going to come out edible.
Right. Fantastic. So I,
which,
but dump dump ching. So
which hold on a second, which puts me into your last bit of question. I don't know what the next future hop something looks like.
No.
But what I do know, or what I hope for is that the principles, the ideas, the things that we spend so much of our life teaching and talking about, what I hope for is that we don't have to teach and talk about it anymore.
Yeah.
That's what I hope for.
Yeah.
I hope that the next generations of whatever this is.
Yeah.
Whatever this is. I hope that the conversation still isn't having to be had that air is pretty stinking normal.
No.
I hope that whatever the conversation is that we shouldn't have to be begging, I won't say begging, but informing.
Yeah.
I will beg sometimes. Yeah. But informing organizations that maybe they should treat their people like people.
Yes.
I hope that the conversation, whoever that practitioner is after you and I are long dead, gone, and buried.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That I hope it's
human
not,
error. No shit. Yeah.
I hope that we're still not having this conversation around what was the cause? Operator error.
Yeah.
I hope that we're still not having that conversation 50, 100 years from now. I don't think we will. I'm pretty optimistic with this.
Yeah.
Right. I genuinely don't think that we will. And whatever that looks like in the future, I don't know.
No.
I don't know. But if we freed up that collective brain power, right? If we freed up that knowledge that has been hidden within our organizations by labeling things as human error and stopping on the surface of that and blaming and shaming and retraining, if we freed up that time and energy that we've invested into blaming, shaming, retraining, operator error kind of stuff, I don't know. Uh-huh. I think we'll see some amazing things coming out of organizations.
Let's keep our fingers crossed.
Years and years down the road.
Let's keep our fingers crossed. Right, can I wrap this one up then?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for listening. You've been listening to The Hop Nerd, Teresa Swinton.
Love it.
Standing in for Sam Goodman. I think we should do this regularly.
I think we should too.
I quite like sitting here with my mouth shut and you doing all the talking.
I think we should do this.
But now you have to take me to the airport so I can... Go home.
God, it is time for you to go home.
Oh, it was time for me to go home half an hour ago, mate.
I didn't know that. What time do you need to be there?
In a half an hour.
Oh, that's exactly what it takes to get there. I think we'll be in good shape.
Wonderful. So thanks.
Heading back to the UK.
Thanks for having me, Sam. It's been amazing spending this time with you, and I can't wait to our next trip to Alaska and Chile.
We'll be back in Africa,
in
Brazil.
I know.
Probably have a bunch of other stuff happening in between.
Yeah.
I won't let the cat too much out of the bag, but we might even have some surprising things happening in November.
Oh, my God,
might be pretty interesting.
I may be rather excited about what may or may not be happening in November.
I'm pretty excited, and I think many people out there that may or may not get an invitation to what we're talking about in November might be kind of excited too.
Yeah, I think so.
Last but not least, but you and I have been doing a bunch of stuff together.
Yeah.
And we'll probably be continuing to do a bunch of stuff together. And we would like to come do a bunch of stuff with you guys out there too. So,
oh, yeah, that would be
amazing.
Don't
hesitate to get in contact with one of us.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you get in touch with one of us, you can actually get both of us.
It's like Pinky and the Brain.
Which is kind of fun, yeah. So if you want all this up in your organization.
Don't scare the life out of everyone. Thank you so much, Sam. Thank you. And I can't wait to hear what this waffle sounds like.
It's exactly that. Waffle is, I think, is the right way to put it. Thanks for listening, everybody. We greatly appreciate all of your support of the Hot Nerd Podcast, the Hot Nerd LLC. If you need a little bit of help of bringing human and organizational performance to life, if you would like to take your efforts around learning and improving to the next level, yep, I can help with that. Head over to www.thehotnerd.com or send me an email, thehotnerd@gmail.com. Until next time, bye, everybody. Bye.